Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody. I want to welcome you to Common Sense Conversation, the show that attempts to break the myth that common sense is so rare, it's a superpower. Tonight, we're doing part two of our Guns in the Black Community episode, and hopefully we can wrap it up, but if not, then it's just a conversation that we'll just continue to carry on. We are getting ready to get started and get into it, but before we do that, let me make sure that you have all of the information that you need to have in order to start the show. If you want to call in and be a part of tonight's show, you're welcome to do so. The call-in number is 516-418-5878. Again, that number again is 516-418-5878. There's a whole bunch of eights in there. I hope you catch it. If you're interested, the chat room is open. You're welcome to participate in the chat room and be a part of tonight's conversation through the chat room. I'll be answering questions as best I can, and we're going to keep it going like that. And also, we will be joined by my good friend, William Lattimore, who's coming in, and he is the black gunslinger. But William, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, man. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. I can't complain. It's another day. We're getting ready. We're getting into it. And I wanted to just make sure that everything was all right with the guns in the black community. And just to really get started, brother, you had something going on. Was it today that you did it?
Yes, we had a range day today for the for my chapter, my gun club, and the National African American Gun Association. My chapter is the Henry Johnson Gun Club, so we had our range day today.
Oh man! And if you guys happen to take a look, I don't know, does the Henry Johnson Gun Club? You guys have a page, a web page, or a Facebook page people can see or view?
We do. You can find us on Instagram, Henry Johnson Gun Club. Also on Facebook, Henry Johnson Gun Club. That's the best way to find us. Also, if you go to the NAGA website, in the NAGA.co, look under chapters, you'll see our chapter listed for the Dallas area.
Okay. So that's www.naaga.co for those who don't know.
Correct.
National African American Gun Association. Yeah, National African American Gun Association is the name of the group or the organization, and we'll be getting into that as well later tonight, the different organizations that are available to the black community for those who are interested. And for those of you who are calling in, and if you have any questions throughout the show, we'll try to take some questions, and hopefully we'll be talking to a few other instructors as we go along. All you need to do is just simply press 1, and that'll put you in the queue, and I'll bring you up, and we can talk, and we can get your questions, or just you can tell us about your experiences. We are expecting a few callers to call in from different areas of the country who are instructors who hopefully will be sharing their experiences and talk about some of their insights, and we can get some of their wisdom and insight from the group. So by all means, going forward, one of the things that I wanted to do as we got started was to kind of catch up with some things that we talked about. We left off with, on the previous weekend, last weekend we ended it. Basically, I was talking about the four safety rules, and basically these are rules that instructors typically will use throughout their training. Always, assume all guns are loaded. Never point your gun at anything you're not willing to kill or destroy. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target. and be sure of your target and what's beyond it. Now, I also want to mention where these rules come from. Now, a lot of people just assume that, maybe somebody made them up, and they did. Actually, there was a gentleman by the name of General Jeff Cooper, and he's considered to be the father of the modern-day, modern technique of handgun shooting. And he built these rules as a way of just familiarizing yourself with firearms and their parts. And if you as we go into it, and like most instructors will talk about the different aspects of a gun, from the muzzle to the grip, to the back strap, all of those good parts of the gun. So those are the areas that we talked about, and it's something that we emphasize and push over and over and over again. So what I want to do is just pick up where we left off with that, but going deeper into it and getting into some of the things that we do. And then one of the things I want to do is I want to go ahead and start trying to bring some of the instructors in. If I'm correct, I think I'm pulling in somebody. So I'm going to bring them in, and we'll go from there. If you hold on with me for a second. Caller in the 901 area code. That's Tennessee.
Hello.
Caller, you're on. Hello.
Hi. How are you?
Who am I speaking with? I'm fine. How are you? Who am I speaking with?
This is Tiffany Johnson.
Okay. Hi, Tiffany. How are you doing?
Not too bad, thanks.
That's good. Okay, so Tiffany's on, and I'm just making sure because as we start the show, we have so many people calling in or going forward, but I want to go ahead and since Will's on the line, Will, go ahead, and if you want to, you can introduce yourself again, reintroduce yourself, and then I'll bring Tiffany back in, or I'll have Tiffany introduce herself and who she is and what organization she represents.
All righty, not a problem. Good evening, everybody. My name is William Lattimore. I am the president of the Henry Johnson Gun Club, the Dallas chapter of the National African American Gun Association.
Okay, good, good. Miss Tiffany, you wanna tell us about you and who you are and who you represent, what you represent?
Sure. My name is Tiffany Johnson. I live in Memphis, Tennessee, and I am a firearms instructor. I've been teaching for about 20 years or so. I grew up in the Rangemaster School under Tom and Lynn Givens, and now, in addition to helping out with Rangemaster, I teach in Middle Tennessee and throughout the region for a company called Citizens Safety Academy that's owned by my partner, Akil Kadir. He might be joining us later tonight. I'm not sure. He was invited as well. But that's me in a nutshell.
Okay. Well, welcome both of you. And again, Will was on last week, and Will and I shared some conversation about gun laws, restrictive gun laws, the history of gun laws within this country. And we kind of got into the timeline of the gun laws and how gun laws were basically enacted, and a lot of them were enacted directly towards Black people and the Black community, preventing, especially those who served in the Civil War, the Black men who served in Civil War, it prevented them from owning guns or limiting them to certain aspects. They could only own a certain type of gun. And in some situations, everyday citizens had the right to come in and inspect your gun or inspect your home for a gun. So we got into that and kind of broke down some of the things that we were getting into. And I guess we can kind of start the questions. I guess with Will, you brought up some of the things you talked about and some of the organizations that you belong to. And one of the things that I want to ask you about and kind of get deeper into with you was some of the goals that you have for your gun club and what you would like to see your gun club do within the community, because a lot of times people assume that you're just a gun club and all you're doing is talking about guns. But a lot of times gun clubs do a lot of other things within the community. And if you could just elaborate on some of the things that you're doing and would like to do within that.
Sure. So one of the very first things that I want to do is to do a school supply drive. One of the things that I saw a need for in the community is when kids go back to school, they always need school supplies. So myself and my VP, Ken Jones, we came up with the idea of doing a school supply drive, a book bag drive. That way we could eliminate, to take the burden off of some parents to provide those things for their kids if we can provide it for them.
Okay, excellent, excellent. And Tiffany, are there any things that your organization does for the community?
Well, we are, Akil calls us gateway instructors, and what he means by that term is we like to try and help people who are either new to the firearms community or who are hesitant or even fearful of firearms and help them. We like to be a sort of on-ramp to show people who may not think so that they do actually have a place in the, you know, the American tradition of arms. And so we offer a lot of training opportunities that have, we try to remove some of the traditional barriers like we've got now, especially in the COVID era. We've got a lot of online training available. We're doing whatever we can to lower our prices so that there's no financial barrier. We sometimes offer free training to the communities just so that we can start whetting appetites and dispelling myths and getting people curious about what else there is to learn in the gun world and maybe some of the misconceptions that they may have entertained. And hopefully, you know, with that teaser, if you will, they'll be curious enough to continue on and get more training. So that's kind of our shtick in the training world.
Okay. Now, while we're on that subject and talking about involving or getting people involved in this type of culture and the gun culture or being more active in it, one of the things that I've looked at, and you and I both are instructors, so one of the things that I've run across is the idea, you know, most people have a common fear. And if we could just have really quick talk about the common fears that a lot of people have when it comes to being a first-time gun user or gun owner, where they come in and, like I said, I have a friend and she's going to kill me, but she and I were talking about it a few minutes ago, and she said, you know, her fear is that she'll shoot and she'll drop the gun. And these are some of the common fears that we may encounter when we're providing courses for first-time shooters. What would you say, in your opinion, is something that, as an instructor, how do you address those fears? They show up to the class, they're ready to participate, but they have that genuine fear of a gun, fear of the recoil, fear of the bang. How do you address those things?
Well, if that question is for me, I think one of our advantages in this terrain is that I was that person myself. Before I started training with firearms, I was terribly afraid of guns. And so I like to let students know that I can relate and that I don't think that their fears are stupid or silly or unfounded. I completely understand how they feel. And that alone, I have found, works wonders for breaking the ice and starting to pull down those barriers, because I think a lot of students who are fearful of guns go to gun classes with the preconceived notion that they're going to be the only one there who's afraid and that the instructors are either going to look down on them for being afraid or be incapable of understanding their fear. So that's a huge hurdle, and it's one of the things that I hasten to dispel, because I want them to know as soon as they walk through the door that those fears are normal and they don't make them, you know, cowardly or anything like that. And I completely understand. And the next thing is to simply go at the student's pace. I think a lot of instructors, especially those who don't understand how someone can be afraid of a firearm, will tend to push students to match the instructor's intended pace of teaching. And I think that that's a big mistake, and it can often lead to, you know, can often lead to negative experiences that only exacerbate fears rather than alleviating them. And so I would just urge instructors to take their time. I mean, there have been times when we've had classes full of new students and half of them were terrified, and we ended up scrapping our entire lesson plan and rewriting it right there on the spot and doing something completely different with the class. And maybe we had planned on firing 100 rounds and we end up only firing 10 rounds or whatever the case may be. So I just think from an instructor standpoint, the key is to be patient, to be nimble and agile, and to not condescend, and to try and put yourself in your student's shoes and be sympathetic.
I hear you, and I agree with you. One of the things that I've learned is a lot of, like you said, they come in with preconceived notions as to what the class is going to be like, what's going to take place during the class. And one of the things that I often break the ice with is I tell them that this is not the class for John Wick, nor is it the class for Rambo. So therefore, coming in, just, you know, let them understand this is a class to teach you the basics and get you familiar with a firearm and how to properly use it, and just going forward so that you don't, you know, you don't stress out. We're going to walk through it, and we're going to walk through the paces of it. So with me, you know, and I know that, like you said, a lot of times that people see, maybe they see it on YouTube or they see a movie and they see these large caliber firearms, or they see how people, you know, how actors portray a shooter. And we just have these conceptions of what it is that they, you know, what it is that a shooter does, or how to handle a gun. And I think that those are some of the things that we, you know, like you said, you try to deal with the preconceived notions and break down the misconceptions and teach them using a little patience and making sure that they understand the fundamentals of a firearm and how to properly use it. So by all means, I want to circle back around and kind of bridge some of the gaps that we talked about, because we're talking about using a gun, understanding, breaking down the myths and preconceptions, and we kind of touched on community. So I want to kind of, like I said, bridge the gap between the community and the gun ownership and ways that we can do that. So I'm going to come back to you, Will, and let you kind of give your thoughts on that and how you feel is, you know, that those things can be accomplished.
Right. So one of the ways I see that they can be accomplished is letting people know that the gun it's not like it's this powerful thing. I said it before, it's not like this powerful thing that you don't control. A lot of people grow up with a fear or aversion to firearms. And I think that, especially within the Black community, it's deeply rooted from the things they see. And I feel like the more people we have, like yourself and Tiffany, instructor-wise, that's one of the big ways we can do it. When they see other folks who look like them out there doing it, showing them, hey, it's not as bad as you think, and like Tiffany alluded to, being patient with people, just showing them, look, there's a space for us, we can do this, it's okay. Like I said, in the community outreach is one of the biggest ways I think we can do it. Just seeing that it's not just, hey, let's go shoot guns and that's that. No, it's these folks do shoot guns, but they actually care about the community. And I really think that's one of the huge ways we can do it. Just being more vocal in our community, and showing people that there's a bunch of us that are doing it.
Okay. And there's one thing that I did want to highlight because I'll direct this one back at Tiffany. In your group, I know at one point you talked about one of the free webinars that you offer for people on a regular basis. And if you would like to talk about, you know, what it is and what it is that you offer in that webinar. Did we lose you?
Sorry, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, sorry. So I was saying the webinar is called Guns 101, and we post it on social media and on our website. And it's not we can't do it free for everybody just because we have overhead we have to cover. But what we do is we offer the first so many tickets for free, and then after that, and that's just kind of an incentive to, you know, anybody who's kind of on the fence, go ahead and jump in there. You don't have to pay anything. And then the second set of tickets are only $5. So it's not, you know, it's not really free, but it's pretty close. We only charge $5.
Well, I apologize. I don't want people to think coming in, well, I want to attend and it's free, but I just want to make it aware. So I don't want to give misinformation on that. Definitely.
Well, no, we appreciate it. And you know, anybody who is interested and wants to attend, I mean, we do that every third Wednesday. We do it every month, and they're all posted through December. And, you know, we're getting ready to post our 2021 schedule soon. And so we'll have it every third Wednesday. And if anybody wants to just sign up for all of them, I mean, you're more than welcome to do that, because, like I said, the first few tickets are free. So we get a different group of people every month. We've got a couple of regulars who come and hang out with us, who have been there multiple times, and it's an open Q&A. And so what made us start it was in a lot of Facebook groups where we're active, we often see the same questions posted over and over again, especially from people who are new. And so we said, let's offer this, you know, this event where people can come in and ask questions of instructors and people who have experience, because sometimes what happens on the internet is folks there's no way to know whose advice you can trust, and everybody wants to jump in and, you know, kind of be an expert and have their moment of fame. So it's a little tough to navigate those waters, and so we wanted to offer that same resource but in a more controlled environment where people have access to our credentials and our bona fides, and they can see where we've studied and what our pedigree is, and know that they can take our advice with, you know, a degree of trust, and get in touch with us afterwards if they have any further questions.
Okay. Excellent. And I agree with you wholeheartedly when you made the statement about everyone's an expert when it comes to guns, in the sense that you have people who are first-time buyers and they want to buy a gun, so they ask someone. And it's always encouraged to purchase or get advice, some kind of advice. But you have some people who are just dead set and they know everything about guns, and sometimes you find out that they know nothing at all about it. So definitely. And I'll go back to getting into that conversation about teaching and instructing and going and how that pertains to the community, especially in this climate. And I know that a lot of it's been politicized as far as, but we've seen the rise of black gun owners in the sense that we're starting to go to the gun store, we're purchasing guns at a higher rate, given the climate, given the certain things that have been said and done in our community or in and around our community. And I'll start with you, Will, asking or addressing these issues with you from being the president of a gun club. What are some of the things that you've noticed as far as trends, as far as whether they're upticks or different questions or comments or insights? And what insight can you provide to that in this climate?
Yeah, so I've noticed that with the climate as it is right now, I've noticed a rise in inquiry about joining the gun club, people wanting to be around other black firearms owners, especially within the last few months. The gun club, actually, today we had about 40 people at the range today, and my first range day was like 7. So, and that was
okay.
Probably back in like June. So, yeah, I've noticed a large uptick. One of the things I would advise people on, though, is I get the climate, but don't just think buying a gun is the last step. I always tell people, yeah, it's good to have the gun, but you need to get trained as well. You need to get the proper training and things like that, because just having a gun sitting there means nothing if you don't know how to use it. And I would say I'm happy that more black folks are getting into firearms, but we can't let the fear drive us, if that makes sense. We can't just be, oh, there's someone said this or someone said that, and this is going on, let me get a firearm. Because what do you do when that fear isn't there anymore? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so, yeah.
Are you, with your gun club, are you having conversations with new members coming in, or just meeting people who are basically coming in saying, you know, I'm a first-time gun owner, never owned a gun before, never shot a gun before, but I just bought this brand new gun, and I'm concerned about my family's safety and things like that. What, you know, are you doing intensives, or are you just having, you know, welcoming them in and kind of working them into the...
So, right. So I've had several people reach out to me like that. Some folks who have never wanted to touch a gun before have reached out to me. And I always tell them, hey, if you feel that way, if you're nervous or what have you, totally understandable. What I try to do at the range day is for those newer folks who have never touched a gun before, I try to walk them through the basics of how to handle a firearm, how to grip it, and stuff like that. I always try to make them feel comfortable. I don't try to use the fear that they already have, but I let them know that it's okay. You know what I mean? I let them know it's okay. You see what's going on. It's totally understandable. It's totally fine. I'd never try to use that against them or anything like that. So I've always been very welcoming to anyone who says to me, hey, I see what's going on and I'm afraid, or things like that. So I'm always very welcoming to those folks. I'm welcoming to anyone. So.
Okay. Good. And before we go any further, I want to bring in another guest who's calling in, and this is he's with Tiffany, and they work together. Akil Kadar, are you there?
Hey, yeah, I am. Sorry.
I'm there. I'm sorry to keep you waiting. How you doing?
Doing real good.
We just had a
class today. Bear with me. I'm doing paperwork after the class we had today. So.
Oh, okay. Well, I know that feeling. Good luck to you. And getting that done. If you could really quickly just introduce yourself. We know Tiffany's already mentioned you and talked about you and working with Citizen Safe Academy. If you could just tell us a little bit more about who you are and give us a little bit about your background.
Hey, everybody. My name is Akil Kadir. My background is I was raised in the Dory Miller Rifle and Pistol Club of Buffalo, New York, which was started by my dad in 1980. It's still one of the still going on. It's one of the older pistol and rifle clubs, gun clubs in Buffalo. I mean, in America, actually. My dad was a NRA instructor, and I was raised, you know, under him doing it. I helped him out when he did permit classes up in Buffalo, New York, and he would help law enforcement officers. A lot of black officers would wash out in the police department. The Buffalo Police Department was found guilty in the 70s and 80s of deliberately not hiring minorities, and the way they would get brothers and sisters washed out was firearms. So my dad would come in and he would, you know, he would help them out. So I, you know, came up under him. In 1992, I became a firearms instructor myself in the NRA. I'm a pistol instructor and rifle instructor, and that was the same year I went to the police academy. Did about 15 years there, and then got out. And since then, I've been, and while I was there, I did, you know, a little bit of SWAT. Also became a firearms instructor with there, and also got out after doing that. And now I currently, which is me and Tiffany, run Citizen Safety Academy, and I also do training for the federal government, firearms training for the federal government. So been at it a long time, not always good, trying to get better. You know, I consider myself a senior student, and you know, willing to help anybody, especially our people, to become, once again, become part of the America's burgeoning gun culture.
Okay. Great, great. Awesome. And again, welcome. And I'm glad to have you and Tiffany a part of the conversation tonight. Definitely.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
No problem. Okay, so we kind of covered a lot of stuff. Well, and also I'm reflecting on last week when we talked about this, and we kind of talked about the community again. We're still dealing with the gun community, and not just the gun community, but the black community. I still want to kind of deal with the fears of the black community and some of the things that the coverage, the media coverage, that is how we're presented in dealing with the gun community and the gun community and the black community, and then you'll see some of the things that I've talked. And the reason why I say that is because a couple of days ago I was watching a news segment, and they were talking about one of the state representatives was on, and he was talking about, we don't need guns in the black community. We don't need, you know, it's too much violence in the gun community. And what I want to do is, I guess we can go around and talk about it really quick. And since Akil's just new on, I'll start with Akil. But dealing with the idea that the misinformation and the misrepresentation of guns being the source of violence within the community and the reasons for getting it out. How would we deal with that and address those issues, kind of combat or counter that type of conversation?
Is that for me?
Starting with you. Okay. We'll go around.
Okay. Appreciate it. It's a lack of understanding what the, it comes from, to me, it stems from a lack of understanding what the true causes of the issues in the black community are. You know, gun control is more of a symptom than it is actually, you know, a cause of an issue. And a lack of understanding of that, I think, is what leads to a lot of what we see going on with us sometimes championing gun control, when the truth is that we need protection more than anybody else. What my advice as to how to combat it is, what we're doing is opening up those conversations and being seen, you know, because we don't, you know, as you discussed earlier, I thought you made a really good point about how we have been, you know, there was a concerted effort to keep us away from firearms, you know, going all the way back to right after Bacon's Rebellion, you know what I'm saying, in the Virginia colony, you know, right before we became chattel slaves, they removed, you know, Africans could not own firearms. Africans could not own, you know, even sharp instruments, knives and things like that. And those type of things generally come before, you know, slavery. So, you know, it's been, because America has been about that 400 years now. And so it's going to take a while, and it's going to take efforts on our part to change the culture. And one of them is people seeing us, things what you're doing, like what you're doing right now, what we're all doing, being seen, understanding the narrative and giving a counter narrative. And one of the things me and my dad have been studying lately is the pivotal role that firearms played in the civil rights movement that is often hidden from a lot of us, you know. I mean, we're often taught what, you know, Rosa Parks sat down, Martin Luther King stood up, and white people saw the light, you know, and there was a lot more to it. You know, and if you read books like I'm sure everybody here has read Nicholas Johnson's Negroes and the Gun, you know, to understand that, you know, that there was, yeah, that there was a big part of it. And I think that educating our people on that, what we really already kind of know, and you know, giving them, letting them know that there's an option, that there's something else other than what other people tell us is good for us, you know. And I think, like I said, we're on the vanguard of that, showing people something different than what's normally being told is good for us. Because when it comes to that type of thing, I think that's what we're told, you know, that gun control is what's good for us. You know, when you talk to most black people, they'll tell you, take unemployment out of the ish, out of the neighborhood, take drugs out of the neighborhood. You know, do you have a gun problem? No. And we know that deep down inside. So it just takes people like us to step up and say it and embody it, embody responsible, sober, mature gun ownership and education.
Exactly.
I hope that answered the question.
Oh, it did. you're right on point. So, but I'm gonna keep going around the, like, I guess you can say this is a round table, if we want to call it a virtual round table. But Will, you want to touch on that as well?
Sure. When it comes to I'm going to jump on the whole gun control and the gun violence. When it comes to that, they talk about the gun violence as if that's the root cause, but they don't want to talk about what's actually causing it. And like Akil said, it's certain factors, socioeconomic factors, you know, the unfair housing, unfair job market. There's many things that play a role in that. It's not, but the way the media portrays it, it's this black on black violence, this gun crime, it's like this plague that's destroying our community. But they never talk about the real factors of it. And to me, that's one of the things that hinders us as a whole when they don't address the things that are truly causing the problem. And like Akil said, it takes all of us to show it in a different light. Because for me, I never looked at the guns as the issue. I always looked at the people as the issue. Because there's gun violence everywhere. When you think about it, if you think about gun violence, it's everywhere. It's not just in the black community, but they will make it seem like that's the quote unquote destroyer of the black community is the gun. You know what I mean? And like I said, it's socioeconomic standards, it's poverty, it's lack of equal education opportunities. It's all of that plays a factor into it. And it's really, the gun is it's really not the issue because you can give them anything. You can put a sword out there and people in poverty will use a sword. So it's every other factor that people fail to look at.
So, okay. Thank you. And Tiffany, you want to round us out?
Sure. So, first of all, I just want to second everything that has already been said. And I'll just add, you know, whenever politicians say that there are too many guns in the black community, especially, particularly when they zero in on the black community, I just find it offensive because most of those politicians have their own security details, and my guess is that their security guards have guns. And so anytime they say that, I find it extremely hypocritical. And if they point directly at the black community to the exclusion of other communities, I find it to be extremely racist, regardless of who's saying it, and especially when it's black people who are saying that. We're certainly capable of being racist against our own kind, just like any other group. And that happens a lot in the political class. But it's, uh-huh. you know, it's a special kind of elitism that leads someone to denounce gun ownership while they have taxpayer-funded security guards surrounding them with guns. And so I just say to that, you know, I will trade you my guns for your security detail. But until I can afford a security detail, I'm just going to have to settle for my guns.
Exactly. I agree with you. I second what you just said. One of the things that I've noticed, again, like you, they will tell you what type of, from high-capacity magazines to you don't need this assault rifle. Those kinds of conversations are being put out there by individuals who are protected by security detail, Secret Service, or whatever, and those men that protect them are trained to use firearms. But there's never a concern about high capacity, high capacity magazine or assault rifles, whatever you, how the terminology that they use. Getting a little bit more into the political side of it, in dealing with firearms. And again, we've kind of talked about it. We've talked about it last week, and we getting back into it again. One of the many things that was used in order to regulate, especially in the black community, and I think that that's kind of where we get our stigma, if I can say that, if I can go in that area. If you look at some of the laws that were passed over the years that were basically blocking black people from getting or using firearms, and that's where we develop a lot of our mentality about it being a tool of violence that is being destructive in our community. How do I want to put this? When we're talking about the political aspect, because I've noticed more and more, it becomes very, very political when it comes to guns. And you see a lot. It's almost like the conception is, or the misconception is, that if you're a gun owner and if you're supporting the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms, then you're automatically Republican. You can't be a Democrat, and you can't be anything that supports a liberal agenda. Personally, I feel as though we need to remove those stigmas from that way of thinking or from that conversation, because I feel like in some situations it takes away from what we're trying to accomplish. And I'll just open that up to the floor and ask you guys, what are your feelings on that as far as the stigma? Like, for instance, you'll see some, I know all of us at some point have looked at YouTube videos of gun instructors or people who do firearm review or have a conversation around firearms. A lot of them are almost pro NRA, pro Republican, and they use some of the same rhetoric that you would hear when we hear about what it means to be a firearm person. So I will open the floor to that, and anybody who feels comfortable answering that question or addressing it.
Well, I'll jump in. The problem, this is a simple problem, I really am sometimes baffled at just how much of a lightning rod it's become. But for everybody who leans right, is conservative, who considers himself or herself a Republican and feels, as you said, that, you know, gun rights are distinctly Republican or conservative, in that being pro-gun and being liberal or Democrat are mutually exclusive, I would simply say to you, number one, that's nonsensical. Because human beings don't fit neatly into boxes. I would argue that if you do find yourself fitting so neatly into a box, that you might want to get out a little bit more and maybe expose yourself to some new experiences and you know, diversify your background a bit and see just what a colorful tapestry of humanity this country really is. It's interesting. I find so often that conservatives are the first to tout the diversity of flyover country in Middle America and how taken for granted those demographics are, and yet they will likewise take for granted other demographics when they assume that there is no interest in gun culture, there is no interest in the Second Amendment or in personal defense outside of flyover country or rural America or conservative America. I think that's honestly just kind of silly. And the other thing is subscribing to those kinds of beliefs is actually self-defeating. If you're a Republican and you think that Democrats are your enemy, then, you know, that's very short-sighted thinking, because this boils down to plain math. Even if you have zero desire to welcome any liberals or Democrats in your life as friends or colleagues or associates, even if your strict goal is to advance Republican agendas as you see those being constituted, then it's in your best interest to actually welcome people of different political stripes into the firearms community. Why? Because for any legislation to pass, depending on where you are, you need at least a majority vote. And some places now you need a 60% vote. And so you simply can't get that with just Republicans. It is literally mathematically impossible to get anything you want passed with only Republicans forever. So at some point you're gonna have to embrace a more diverse spectrum of political beliefs, and you're gonna have to face the eventuality, the reality that gun owners are of all stripes, all colors, shapes, sizes, political persuasions. It's time that everyone everywhere just owns that and leans into it.
Exactly. Thank you. Kiel, William, any thoughts?
For me, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly with what Tiffany said. I don't think I need to add anything. I think she hit the nail on the head with that one.
All right.
Yeah, I'm going to stay out of that one because, like I said, I agree with what she said.
All right. Great. Any other thoughts, Akil? Do you have any thoughts, or you just?
No. I'll let Tiff speak on that. I've heard that one before. It's smoking. that's her.
I guess.
I don't know. You know, she's done her thing with that, and she's been actually putting in work with that too. To her credit, I mean, she's not just speaking on mind, but she feels she's actually putting, you know, work into that. But I think that that's one of the big issues we have, is everybody wants to put labels or put people in the boxes, you know. And unfortunately, our lesson, me and Tiff talked to the gun community a lot. Like, if you go on our website, we've got a whole short, I think it's free. Tiff may correct me, but I think it's free on broadening the 2A tent. And what that is pretty much for everybody to try to, you know, understand that we need to bring more people into this thing. One thing that Tiff often says that I think is smoking, and she says is, she's often quoted as saying, you know, she'll say this to conservative groups, does the Second Amendment apply to liberals? Yes. Does the Second Amendment apply to people who don't agree with the Second Amendment? Yes.
Yes.
You know, and if we're absolutist about it, like, you know, if we really believe in the Second Amendment, then we believe it's for everybody, including people who don't even want it. And yeah, broadening the 2A10 is something that me and her have spoken on. And like I said, I implore people to take a look at on our website and see her presentation on it. And we'd be open to some critiques on it too. If anybody wants to take a look and give us some ideas on how we can make it better, we'd appreciate it.
Okay. Awesome. So again, and for those who are in the chat room, you can actually click on the link. I actually put the link in for their business and for their training inside for Citizen Safety Academy. You can go there and take a look and, like you said, check it out for yourself. So going into this.
And it's free, too.
And it's free.
Sorry about that. Yeah, it's already free.
Okay, so, I hear you. One of the things in kind of steering into a different direction, and and after this, we'll kind of go into some of the questions that are in the chat room. I wanted to kind of talk about the business side of being a firearms instructor, because one of the things that when I started, for me, it was I was looking at my gun club, and I was saying that this is a process that I wanted to have, and I wanted to open up, especially for members of the gun club, to at least take the basic pistol course and be familiar with basic pistol and teach them. That way we were sure about doing it. And all, not only that, but for the officers of the club to become, you know, range safety officers and to be able to, you know, help on the range, because I felt like those were important positions within it. But it evolved for me as an instructor because I started to see there were lots of people, and, you know, it really just, I guess I could say it opened my eyes to how many people were really wanting to be a part of that. So it pushed me to do and get more training in it. One of the things that I've come to see is the partnerships that either happen or don't happen for whatever reason. And from a, even from a gun club perspective, networking and collaborating. I'm a big guy on networking and collaborating, working with other people to help, especially helping community efforts to get people more active and involved, because I feel like we all benefit from that. But from an instructor's point of view, from a business owner's point of view, what are your views and takes on, especially in the firearm community, how do you feel about creating a partnership? Now, Akil and Tiffany, I know that you guys are working together. How does that work out for you? How did you guys find the synergy? I guess that's the best way to put it. I can start with Tiffany or Akil.
I'll let Akil take that one.
Uh-oh, okay.
Well, what we at Citizen Safety Academy, more so than we're a business and we're trying to keep the lights on, but more importantly, we consider ourselves a an incubator of the culture, of this little particular corner of the culture. Me and Tiff decided that, you know, there was something lacking in Gateway instructors in regards to the way new people were coming in, and especially African Americans. And that some of the things you talked about earlier, as far as how you do that and how you get those people in, people who, you know, for most of their lives never even considered, or like Tiff, didn't even want to be a part of the gun culture. And how do we, you know, change those hearts and minds? And we realized that Gateway instructors are the people at the door were the most important ones. And so we decided, as opposed to complaining about it, me and her decided to go back and address it and grow. You know, network and grow good Gateway instructors. And so what you find here at Citizen Safety Academy is we're actually a collective of instructors. And what we do here is even our competitors, if they want to come work with us, we work with them to make everybody's stuff better. You know, the rising tide rises all boats, and we really approach it like that. On a personal level, me and Tiff, I couldn't imagine doing what I do alone. I don't like doing stuff like that alone. It's all about, I'm very much like you, and I think the way you said it is that I'm all about collaboration and working with people. An instructor named Kathy Jackson, you know, really cemented my mind in a way. And it was something she said, she told me years ago, and she wrote actually, is that, you know, even for people who compete, it's there's, you know, 400 million Americans out there. And, you know, at that rate, all of the instructors in the country could teach 20 people a day. And in 20 years, there'd be a new generation of people that needed to be taught. So, I mean, there's a lot of work. We all need to work together and do the best we can to make each other better. I mean, I've only gotten better by working with other people. And I stand on the shoulders of some giants to do, you know, what we're trying to do here. And so, you know, once we and her came together and realized that we both had that approach to it, we've been working together pretty hard, and I have no desire to work alone at this. You know, it's collaboration, working together, synergy, finding somebody that you work well with, and going out and putting out good work, because you know we are doing some really honorable work. We're lifesavers. We're teaching people how to save and preserve life, and what's more honorable than that? And, you know, and for that should be shared with everybody and get as many people involved as we can. So I'm constantly looking out, supposedly even looking for firearms instructors. I'm looking for people, type people, and try to make them into better firearms instructors. And,
yes.
And you know, and not only send them out to, you know, to do other things, but hopefully become their students one day. I said, I have, like I said, a collective of instructors who teach here. I'm actually preparing the classroom for another instructor, works for another range, but he also works with us, and he'll be teaching the class in my place, and I'll probably sit in his class and take notes. And this is the guy that I certify, and I'm gonna sit. But he does such a good job in his own way that every time I sit in his class, I'm finding other things and better ways to present my information, our information. And so I'm all about that, and I'm eager to go around
Great.
And actually get my stuff together to go find other instructors to work with and study under. So I hope that answered your question.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. So Will. I don't want to overlook, Tiffany, you want to add on to that, or you want to give you from your perspective, or you think he hit it right on the head?
I think Akil knocked it out of the park.
Okay, great.
Just one really small thing that I'll add to that, though. As you were introducing this topic, you mentioned ways in which we partner or don't partner, and I would just say I hope that the partnerships outweigh the lack of partnerships. And if you ever find yourself hating on your competition or feeling like it's in kind of us against them type of mentality, try to suppress that to the extent you can. I mean, we have enough things working against us already. We don't need to also work against each other. So just like Akil said, if you really are in this to do something to contribute to your community rather than just to puff yourself up and be big and bad and famous and have your 15 minutes of fame, if it really is about your students and not just about you, then you should want everyone to get trained, to get competent training, whether they get it from you or they get it from somebody else. So let's ease up on all the hating and, and stop competing against each other so much and start working together and sending each other students and referring each other business and that sort of thing.
Okay, good deal, good deal. Will, William, you want to round it out?
Sure. I'm all about collaboration. Since you and I have had, you know that for a fact. In fact, I call you my unofficial mentor, because had it not been for you, I probably wouldn't be in the position I am right now. I remember, I don't know when you started pushing me into becoming an instructor, but I think it was, 2 months ago, maybe? I don't know if you remember.
I think it's been maybe last month.
I think it might have been 2 months, but, I was like, I don't want to join the NRA and this, that, and the third. I was making all types of excuses. And then, you just kept pouring into me. And then I was like, all right, I'll do my first step. And I took the NRA basic pistol shooting course. And then I know I was so excited. I came home. I was like, hey, look, man, I did it. So, yeah. So for me right now, I'm not an instructor yet, and I say yet because that's a goal of mine. But for me, when people reach out to me and they're looking for training and stuff like that, I recommend them to one of the guys that I know has, for me, his reputation precedes him, and that's Body Bio Tactical and Tactical Social Worker, him and his wife. So I recommend a lot of folks to him because, like I said, I'm not an instructor yet, but this is someone that I've seen work. And like Tiffany said, we have enough things working against us. We don't need any more. So for me, I'm always going to be like, hey, if I can't help you, I know someone who can. Check out this person, this person, this person. I'm not against that, because for me, we're all in this together, and we all make each other stronger. You know, like I say, a chain is as strong as its weakest link, and I'm not trying to be that weak link. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I'm always going to be looking for ways to work together. Yeah, that's always going to be me. And I'm never going to be in it just for self, you know? So like, if I know someone, hey, I need firearm instruction, can you give it to me? I can't, but I know someone who can. So I feel like we need to get out of that whole competition mentality, because it's one thing I always say with my gun club, there's other black gun organizations out here. There's other black gun organizations with chapters in Dallas. But I always say, if we have the same goal, we can occupy the same space because we're all going in the same direction. So we don't need to be against each other. There's another saying, a house divided amongst itself cannot stand. So I want to be that strong foundation for the next generation.
Cool. And then that's really what it's about, you know, pushing people to, I have a habit, and I have to be careful of how I do that, but pushing people to do what you see in them to do better, or to fulfill what they see within themselves, and getting them to that point. I just believe, like I said, I believe in networking, I believe in collaboration, because the back, you know, on the other side of that, you know, as much as we believe that it's all about the competition, a lot of people believe, you know, we subscribe to the capitalist philosophy of the competitiveness of the business, or of a business. And what we end up doing is we sometimes end up hurting ourselves. And in this situation, I feel like when I first started, when I got my training, and I don't know, Akil, Tiffany, if you guys want to jump in on this, and actually, before I even get into that conversation, let me bring on Daryl Holliday, who's a fellow instructor. We've been talking for a while, and we talked about a number of things, and actually, you know, just, you know, if I need to pick my brain, you know, pick his brain about certain things, he's one of the people that I call and talk to. Doc, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Hello? Okay, great.
Yes.
How's everybody doing?
Okay.
Tiffany?
Doing good, thanks.
Doing great,
all righty,
thank you.
Good.
So, but, yeah. Doc, really
I've been
listening
to
the segment. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I'm just saying I've been listening to the segment, and I really enjoy what I'm hearing. You know, you all have some great values and points that you're pulling out amongst each other, so I really enjoy it.
That's good. Thank you. I'm just taking the time to sit down and listen to some great and wise people. That's all. And I just wanted to bring everybody else in on the conversation. Before I open up the floor to questions and ask questions and allow you guys to answer it, one of the things that I want to talk about really quickly going into this and talking about networking, one of the reasons why we get involved with this, or I got involved or doing something like this, was because when I walk into a training room, when I go get to receive training to become an instructor in certain areas, I look around and I see that in most cases, 9 times out of 10, 99.999% of the time, I'm the only one that looks like me, talks like me. And I don't know if you guys have experienced that, but I just felt like going forward, I would make it one of my missions to bring in as many, you know, blacks to come in as instructors so that they can go back and turn. And hopefully I kind of give them and instill it with them, the idea of take this back to the community and let them be a part of that. Is anybody else experienced that?
Yes, I have down here in Miami. I know Keo came down here and talked with us with the gun club and everything. and even as far as the NRA instructor. There was only myself in Akil's class that was the NRA instructor. And I'm noticing now I've gone further and became a rifle instructor. I was the only African-American black man there, plus in the shotgun. So, yes, I'm experiencing that here in the South Florida area.
Okay. So, anybody else? Just us two? We're alone in this?
Well, me, I've been, can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me? All right, I'm
yeah,
with,
we can
with,
hear you.
With the car picking up stuff. So. I've been what I call a training junkie since 1999. I first went to a place, I was a police officer and had to use a gun, and the thing didn't happen the way I thought it should, so I decided to go out and get trained. And I went in the middle of nowhere, Ohio, West Union, Ohio, to a place called Tactical Defense Institute in East Bethany with a man named John Benner, and they completely broke me down and rebuilt me. And ever since then, I've been at it. I do probably, honestly, 7 to 8 classes a year sometimes. I try to get at least 6 in. And 99 times out of 100. Well, that's just me. Since me and Tiff been running, it's been better. Thank you, Tiff. But I used to be, at the end of the day, we would have that, end of the class, we'd have that picture, and I'd be that lone Cocoa Puff floating in the milk, the bowl of milk. That was me, you know, for many times. And so I've been trying to go out and come back and bring that information back to the community, you know, and to make my training better. I wanted to be able to train anybody. I just didn't want to be the black firearms instructor. I wanted to be good at it because my mom always taught me you got to be better than they do. You know what I'm saying? So I always wanted to try to get the best information, be able to teach anybody, be able to teach at the big house, even if I chose to teach down in the quarters. And so, that's been my experience. Like I said, it's been better since me and Tiff have been running. And I've noticed, I'm going to be honest with you, it's gotten a lot better since 99. Now, when I go to trainings, I see a brother here, a brother there. There's a brother Howie down, and you know my man Howie down there. Howie Marbury, bad dude. You know what I'm saying? People are starting to see other people at the training now, and it's making me feel good that, you know, I don't feel like it's like cause for years. My dad, he was doing it, and you know he couldn't get really very little support. You know what I'm saying? And so now when I come home like today, you know, I had a class with 10 black people in the class, which is beautiful. I haven't had that often, and I'm going to go home, I tell my dad, he's going to be like, how many black people was in the class? How many women? You know what I'm saying? And it's nice to be able to say.
Mm-hmm.
And it was full. And it was good. You know what I'm saying? And not only that, they walked away because my biggest thing is to let people know, like you spoke earlier, you need more than that. This, you know what I'm saying? Becoming a responsible, honest citizen is a process and not a class. And so I need to come back and develop skills and things like that. So, you know, that's my experience like everybody else's, but it seems to be that it's changing, the culture is changing, and I'm extremely happy for that. I really am.
That's good. That's good. I'm glad to hear that. Glad to hear that. We have about 20 minutes left of the show, and I appreciate you guys taking the time out to come and sit in with us. With that, I want to shoot some of the questions, deal with some of the questions that are in there. And for the most part, these are questions that I know that I've encountered as an instructor, and I'm sure you guys have encountered. You've had people ask you, whether it's family or friend. I get a lot of questions centering around these questions, so I want to take the time to just shoot it out there, and whoever feels comfortable. Again, this is roundtable, so I'll let you guys answer it as you go. First question would be, at what age would you suggest introducing children to guns? Anybody?
Well, I can answer that here in Florida. Okay, go ahead.
No, you can go ahead, brother.
Okay. This is Doc Holliday down in Florida area. The youngest I've taught in the classroom setting and took to the gun range was 7 years old. And that was because his whole family, mom, everybody had guns in the house. And I really sat with her, sat with the family, and the whole family joined in. And they were at their maze. The kid knew more about guns and bullets than they did because of the video games and Fortnite. You know, he knew which one, the 308. He was saying, this is an AR-15 bullet. This is a 9mm bullet. And they were shocked. 7 years old.
Hmm.
And I took him to the range. Mm-hmm. And he did pretty good with my 22.
Oh, awesome.
So, yeah.
All right. Was that Akil who had...
Well, my answer would be,
William.
It depends on... Anybody? My answer depends on the child. It depends on the kid. I've raised six. All of them shoot. Three boys. My youngest, who is 20 now, he actually sets up my ranges and everything for me. He actually instructs, co-instructs with me. He started at six, and he was probably one of the better shooters in the house by nine, with a 9mm. You know, it didn't matter the caliber, he could run a gun. Better than the two older brothers, mm-hmm. who are almost 10 years older than he is. My oldest son, you know, who we call Big Baby, because he was a big old baby, a large man, but he was a big baby. I didn't get him to start shooting until he was more 12, 13, because I didn't feel he had the maturity level. So I think it has to do with the kid and with their maturity
yeah.
level and how to see. I had the kid in the class today, the man, he brought his son. He actually said he'd bring his son. The kid is 15 years old, young brother, 15 years old. His aptitude, his firearms aptitude was so good that I had his dad and him stay after class and told him, I think your son should look to become an instructor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that his firearms aptitude was that good. Just, I mean, I don't know what he's been reading or what he's been watching. The questions he answered were far beyond anything that I've seen from a lot of grown-ups, people twice his age, three times his age even.
Okay.
And some people just have it like that. So, you know, I think you got to look at each individual child and take it from there.
Okay. All right. William, you said you had an answer.
For me, I want to piggyback off of what Akil said. It depends on the child. I think at least when they're old enough to comprehend the instruction you're giving, so I'd say anywhere between 5 and 6. If they're, like I said, if they're old enough, if they're able to comprehend what you're teaching them and what you're trying to instruct them and making sure they understand that it's not a toy. So for me, I think about 5 or 6, if they can understand what you're giving them. I don't think there's a right or wrong age, but I think there is a such thing as too young, though.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not 3 or 4, but...
Yeah.
But
I agree. Yeah, I agree with William. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just gonna end it with for me, whenever someone feels like they can comprehend what they're being taught.
Yeah, and I agree with both of you, Akil and William. Got all of you. It really depends on the level of maturity and their willingness and openness to learn and not treat it like you mentioned Fortnite, as long as they're not treating it like it's the video game and trying to emulate what they see in the video game. One of the first things I want them to understand is basically learning how to respect the firearm. Okay, so I can move to the next question. The next question in the chat is, how would you handle someone new to guns but seems too confident, or is that a good thing? So someone who's new to guns, you know, they express that they're new and I guess that they're very confident in it. How would you, as an instructor, or even, you know, because I'm sure William, I'll let you start, Will, being at the with the gun club, how does that come across if you've had encountered that?
Someone who's too confident.
Yeah, they're new with guns. You know that they're new with guns. They've expressed that they're new, and maybe, you know, they want to know is that, but they seem a little too confident, or they, you know, and they ask the question, or is that a good thing? Is the overconfidence a good thing?
I don't think overconfidence is a good thing. Because you can be overconfident and not hit what you're aiming at. So I don't necessarily think it's a good thing. Because for me, some people get a firearm and they think, okay, I have a firearm. I'm good. I'm good to go. Like, if anything happens, I'm ready for it. And I think that's the wrong mindset to have. One of my philosophies is, yes, I have a gun, but I'm not going to let that get in my mindset that I'm untouchable, because that means nothing. You know what I mean? I have a gun. I live in Texas, so same way I have a gun, someone else may have a gun. So I don't let the fact that I carry a gun get me into the mindset that I can be ready for anything. If anything happens, I'm good to go. So for me, handling people who seem too overconfident, I try not to butt heads with them. I try not to make it seem like I know more than them. You know what I mean? I try to subtly knock them off their high horse. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you don't want people out there that think having a gun is the end-all be-all. Because if for some people who think like that, they can end up as a dead person with a gun, someone who may never have a chance to get their gun out. So I try to people to think and to think about other aspects, like if in scenario-based things, if this happens, how would you react? If this happens, how would you react? I saw a video of a guy. He was going to his car, and someone jumped out of one car, pulled a gun on him, and someone ran up from, I don't even know where else in this video this person ran up from. And Doc Holliday, I think you posted the video, if I'm not mistaken. But they got the drop on him, and they wanted whatever was in his bag, and they ended up shooting the guy in the leg. And people were like, well, if he would have had a gun. And I'm like, they already had the drop on him. So if he would have had a gun, there was nothing he could do when they already had the drop on him. You know what I mean? And I really think overconfidence is detrimental in the firearms game. It causes people to think they are John Wick and Rambo. You know what I mean? And I really think that's detrimental. I really think it's detrimental. So, like I said, for me, I try to give people scenarios. How would you react if this happens? How would you react if that happens? And usually I find that people tend to see that, okay, maybe my confidence level shouldn't be that high. So, yeah, that's for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
So this is Tiffany. I'll jump in on that.
Yeah, I'm good. I was just checking the lights. That's all. You know. Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, hold on. Hold on. Hold on, Tiff. All right, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Who's going now?
Okay,
so I was just going to add, I agree that overconfidence is typically a bad thing, and that's true regardless of whether the person is brand new to guns or highly experienced. But what you'll find, I think, is the more you train, the more you notice a trend, and that is that the better the shooter, the more humble the shooter. Typically, the more confident, the less competent. This goes back to something that your listeners may have heard of called the Dunning-Kruger effect. And Dunning and Kruger were two psychologists. The Dunning-Kruger effect is a psychological theory. It's a name given to a specific kind of cognitive bias, whereby basically a person's incompetence, and I don't mean that as an insult, I just mean it in the literal sense of the term, meaning not knowing, having little experience at any subject matter. But a person's incompetence by definition, renders them unable to recognize their own incompetence. In other words, if you don't know anything about the subject, then you don't have the skills to recognize how little you know about that subject. So it's a paradox. You almost can't fault people, you know. It's like if you've never played the game of basketball, then you don't know enough about basketball to see just how little you know about basketball. And the same thing is true with shooting. So I tend to see overconfidence in males a lot more frequently than females. I hate to be sexist about it, but I'm just stating an objective fact that that's been my observation in my 20 years of teaching. And especially when they walk in the room and see a woman leading the class. So sometimes this is one of the beauties of working with Akil, is because when we get that male dominance thing going on, Akil and I can kind of bounce back and forth and figure out what's the best way to handle that person and contain the ego, because ego is the worst enemy of shooting instruction or instruction in any, motor skill, psychomotor skill. So in the classroom setting, I mean, Will was talking about in a club setting, but in a formal class, like an open enrollment class, when I've got a relatively inexperienced shooter who seems to have an outsized level of self-confidence, I agree 100% that you don't want to become antagonistic with that person. You don't want to publicly embarrass that person or try to, beat your chest or condescend or put that person in his place. But there are subtle ways that you can try to show that person that there's a lot more to learn. And if you're teaching, for example, one way is to have your students execute the fundamentals extremely slowly. And that way you can set different and individualized standards for each shooter. So, for example, if you have 10 students on the line and you have them all shoot at an 8-inch circle at 5 yards and you don't give them any time constraints and they all hit inside the circle, well, your overconfident shooter is going to be extremely proud of himself. And so what you do is you artificially force them to execute the fundamentals very slowly, like in a painfully slow way, so that they have to pay critical and precise attention to their trigger control and their sight alignment and see just how precise they can shoot. And that's where the fundamentals really become illuminated, even at distances of 5 yards or closer. And so challenge that person. You know, if you've got the new person who is underconfident, who has confidence deficit, then you encourage that person for getting inside that 8-inch target. You know, you're hitting the target. That's excellent. That's great. Keep it up. For the person who's overconfident, you ask him, well, you know, why are your shots 6 inches apart? I'm giving you all the time in the world. Your fundamentals are on par, are where they're supposed to be. So let's close in that group. And, you know, so that's just one example of how you can give individualized attention, even in a group class with open enrollment and strangers. But I definitely, to get back to the original question, I think overconfidence is a bad thing in the same way that low self-esteem can be a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree wholeheartedly. I've watched a little bit of both on both ends in a class, and having people kind of fluctuate. I've watched confidence grow in shooting once they learn, you know, once you take them through the paces and get them to understand how to properly go through the paces and the fundamentals, and watch them, you know, improve over a matter of, you know, a couple of minutes in going through that. So, yeah, I totally understand. With about 5 minutes left, I want to do, you know, I want to make sure I get you guys and give you guys the proper treatment. I guess that's the best way to do it. And make sure that I take this time to give you the opportunity to talk about your organization and how you guys can be reached so that people who are listening can reach out to you if you're in the area or if you're willing to travel to them to be a part of their training. I would greatly encourage you. So starting with, I guess, citizen safety awareness, since you guys are our guest, if you want to be able to take the time to tell us how you can be reached, where you can be reached, and let the audience know about you again before we close out. I guess, I don't know if Akil is still driving. Akil? Okay, we'll go to Tiffany.
Oh, I'm here.
Okay.
Had to reach up and hit mute. All right, listen, yeah, me and Tiff, the Citizen Safety Academy, based out of Middle Tennessee, which is the greater Nashville area. We also do stuff in Memphis, and this is a little more out in the state of Tennessee. We also travel on the road. We can be a host and hostess to come in and do different types of classes. We specialize in two things, gateway instruction and development of gateway instruction. NRATCs work like USCCATC and things like that, so that we can hopefully shore up the gateway thing, the basic pistols. We believe in the basics mastered and doing it well. We've got a website at citizensofsafety.com. We also do a lot of online stuff with onlinepermitclass.com. Citizensafetyonline.com. Oh, is it CSA Online, Tiff?
CitizensSafetyOnline.com.
CitizensSafetyOnline.com. Y'all can see who the webmaster is, right? All right, so we handle that. And we, like I said, we're open to help anybody in any way that we can. And we, we're glad to help. We're happy to serve.
All right, awesome. Doc, I'm going to open your mic again and let you, if you can hear me, Doc, give your information, how do people talk about your business really quick and let people know how they can reach you.
Yes. This is Darryl Doc Holliday. I'm in the South Florida area. I cover Upper Dade County, all of Broward, as well as the Lower Palm Beaches. Mostly I do a lot of stuff on Facebook and Instagram. My number is 954-892-3969. And my Instagram page is DocHolliday69. So I can always be reached either one of those general areas.
All right. Thank you. And William, Mr. Lattimore, you want to give your information?
Right. So
my
gun club is Henry Johnson Gun Club. You can reach us by email at henryjohnsongunclub@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram at Henry Johnson Gun Club and Facebook, Henry Johnson Gun Club.
All right. So, again, I want to thank you all for being a part of tonight's show and segment. Wrapping up, we have about 2 minutes left. And one of the things that we didn't cover that I wanted to cover was to talk about the organizations that are available to the black community as far as joining. Again, gun clubs are always a good thing, and I guess we're going to have to come back for a third installment of this, but also I wanted you to understand that there are people out here who are capable of providing instruction, who are able to help, and in so many different facets. And they are also willing to work inside the community and make sure our community is stronger. You also have organizations that are available like NAGA. Again, we mentioned it briefly, the National African American Gun Association, which is a national organization that's available to us. I encourage you to pay attention and check them out and do your research and find out more about them. So, again, I thank you all for being a part of tonight's show. Thank you all for listening. This has been a fantastic conversation, again, and I look for you guys to come back again, especially my listening audience. We are definitely interested in this and working within our community and making sure that our community is a safe community. Having said that, thank you again for being a part of tonight's show. We will see you again. Have a good night.